for those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The number to call in, which is toll-free, is 844-320-4299. Not sure if anybody's been watching commodities, but gold and silver is looking good. And if you want to talk to my broker, by all means, just send me that email to metals@reclaimingtherepublic.org. This is also a educational grassroots program that is designed to restoring our republic, placing the general government, or what I call the general government, or what most people call the federal government, back into the framework and scope of the Constitution. Many parts of these shows will refer to previous shows, and as you've already heard and learned, that I'm going through these Federalist Papers, so I'm not going to re-repeat these. I'm building upon these. I'm building my case that there has been more than enough empirical evidence during the ratification process and the galvanizing of this contract that it was a very limited and defined contract. And so consequently, to keep up, you need to listen to all of these shows, go back and grab the podcast so that you can garner what Republic Review is and how we can reclaim the Republic. Don't forget, the place to download these podcasts is now at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org on the podcast page. So I still have this standing contest to see if anyone knows what is constitutionally significant for us regarding November 11th. I'm giving away a set of my books to the first caller who can correctly answer this question. I've had 5 guesses come in this past week. I'm not going to go over what all those were, but I'm not going to be providing hints to anybody off the air. So if you want a hint, you by all means call, and hopefully you're familiar enough with my content and so forth, I can give you a hint and you can answer a question. And if you can figure it out, I don't know if anybody's ever been a hiring manager, have done the hiring process, but a lot of people use Google for figuring out how to answer a question in a difficult interview. We call that a Google interview, but I am I'm okay with somebody being enterprising and resourceful. There's nothing wrong with that. I just would like to find out if somebody can figure out what's significant for us for November 11th. Now let's take a quick constitutional look at the recent events since last week. It seems that we're apt to entrench the unconstitutional role, responsibility, and power of the federal government's health care deeper into Mordor on the Potomac, or what Mike Church refers to it as, and that is D.C., instead of repealing this healthcare abomination. There have been many times where government, not just ours, but government has tyrannically usurped liberties from its people, and they have never willingly gave it back. And this is no different. I've yet to see any point where our government, as noble as they tried to come off, they have never given any liberties back to the people. If one is looking for the answer, you are listening to the right program. And this is the only program with the political courage to discuss the real and only solutions that we have available. Continuing on in the constitutional perspective for the week, there's been a little bit more clamoring with refugees and about bans because Trump has signed a new, more defined travel ban. And in a historical perspective, this nation was very We weren't very sensitive to other religions, contrary to the progressive teachings. As a matter of fact, Jews were not allowed to openly practice in most every single colony that I know of, except for maybe, I think, one during the constitutional process. But well before that, they were definitely not allowed. And as a matter of fact, there was lots of religious persecution. Every single state or colony had its own state-sponsored religion, and it was oppressive towards any and all other religions. I've talked about this before. And at that point in time, Islamists, or what people refer to as Muslims, they were not allowed to migrate here, practice their religion. I mean, they could come here for dignitary, ambassador types of roles, or what have you, but they were not allowed to openly practice that religion here in America. And so we were not a open arms receiving all religions nation when this country was founded. Over time, we kind of relaxed that for whatever reasons those were, but I will tell you that the framers were not hip or keen to some of these religions, specifically the Islamic religion. And as a matter of fact, I believe Jefferson, who had a Quran, wrote a little note in the front of it that he could not trust these people. I'm just paraphrasing, but it's very interesting comments that he makes. That being said, Hawaii says that they want the refugees, and that actually may be a perfect place for them because it's not like they can get in a car and travel to some other state. And so we can give Hawaii an opportunity to see how well they can work in a new way of assimilating refugees. And if that doesn't work, it'd be a lot easier to gather them up. We've already had failures throughout this republic before, such as Dearborn, Michigan, and so forth. And so why do we want to, you know, allow something to fail, and then what do we do about it? Look at Europe. They've got more than enough problems, and those problems have already started rearing their head here. And there's a lot of really good books. Robert Spencer's written a few really good books that talk about stealth jihads and so forth. And I just recommend that anybody that's interested, by all means, the data is out there. Go delve into it. My focus is on the constitutional perspective. And the Constitution, the states have never granted and amended the Constitution to give the federal government the ability to create block grants for any class of people, country, culture, what have you, religion. It doesn't matter. The states have never delegated that. They're supposed to have a standard immigration process. And so this refugee process, to literally look at what they and how they treated the Constitution before, especially like the election of the president and how we did the Electoral College, the minute changes that they did to that, they amended the Constitution, which gave us the 12th Amendment. Why is it that we no longer need to do that? We do need to do that, and that was the standard, but they've convinced us that they don't need to and that they have all the supreme power. Ergo, tyranny, despotism, we've got to step in because we should not be allowing them to do this and stepping on our Constitution. So moving on, one other final thing in the news this past week is that there's another court, and so I want to kind of rail on this and focus on this because Trump could solve this problem by getting both houses of Congress to create a Judiciary Act and cancel all previous and literally give the court or tie the hands of the court and give them no more latitude in legislating and pushing agendas and so forth and forcing them to stay within the constraints of jurisdiction. Jurisdictions for the federal court would be those limited enumerated powers within the Constitution. So anyway, there's a court in Mississippi that is now beginning to hear this case on hate speech where they're trying to ban the Mississippi flag. The lawyer that's pursuing this is Carlos Moore, and the district judge, Carlton Reeves, ruled that Moore failed to show in a previous trial, so he's appealing this to a higher court. And I believe this is going to either the state court or it's going to a federal court. That doesn't matter. the ruling by Reeves basically said that the emblem, he failed to prove that the emblem actually caused harm or cognizable legal injury. Well, I'm going to get back into this when we get back from the break, and then we'll get into some citations unless a caller calls and can answer my question. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. You will find consistent advice among financial advisors, conservative entertainers, preppers, and those who have legitimate concern about our currency and our government. They all recommend holding precious metals in some way and degree for varying reasons. I, too, recommend precious metals, especially holding it in your possession in a secure storage system for several reasons. One, it can protect you from the inflation of a fiat currency. Two, some coins can be used in bartering in an absolute emergency. And three, this is a good way to pass wealth down to your posterity. If you're looking to add precious metals to your portfolio or to your holdings, I would like to show you how you can get these metals for less than how I can get them. You heard that correct, for less than how I can get them. And I believe you cannot beat this price. Let me explain. My broker's company has, I believe, the lowest set price for all metals on the market. And just like all other precious metal companies, they offer commission to those who refer others, which most times this affects the bottom line price. Well, my broker's company does not adjust the price. They have a flat buy and selling price. And I have worked it out with my broker to take a portion of my commission to offer you a discount to let you save money on your purchases for slightly lower than the price, than the selling price that I get them for. It may be a slight discount, but a discount nonetheless. If you're interested in buying physical metals at the lowest price and learning more about this deal, contact me via email at metals, with an S at the end, at reclaimingtherepublic.org. And I will introduce you to my broker, and he can give you the pricing and how you will actually pay less than me. Again, that's metals, M-E-T-A-L-S, at reclaimingtherepublic.org. Thank you. All right, so we're back, and I was just talking about Judge Reeves and the attorney Carlos Moore pursuing this hate speech case in the Mississippi court. Let me quickly get through this. Even though Judge Reeves ruled that Mr. Moore did not prove his case of a legal injury, he did go as far as to say that our position is thoroughly identified. He's basically quoting the South as it seceded in 1861. Our position is thoroughly identified with the institution of slavery, the greatest material interest of the world. He also said, quoting, it put it plainly, Mississippi was so devoted to the subjugation of African Americans that it sought to form a new nation predicated upon white supremacy. Now, I'm not going to get into, you know, the history of slavery and all of that here. It would take me several shows. I would say this, that I would challenge anybody to go out and read Thomas Sowell's book, Black Rednecks and White Liberals, and Cleon Skousen's book, 5,000 Year Leap. I think they will give you a much better macro perspective on slavery than what's happening and what we're being taught today through our progressive education system. Nor am I going to defend any type of speech other than the fact that most persons are free or should be free to say whatever it is that they want. There are laws on the books that restrict speech. However, these laws are designed for public safety, such as you can't yell fire in the theater. I'm thrilled with the fact that when I go traveling, that if I wanted to talk about furniture and I mentioned that I have a bomb chest, that I could actually be grabbed, arrested, and put to the side because the oversensitivity by the TSA in using the word bomb when it's really referring to some furniture. bottom line is that we've gotten to a point where we're way oversensitized towards speech. Now, understanding that this is an emblem, I think we're really going down a dangerous road, allowing the court system to start litigating, and not only litigating, legislating what we have to do. This is an easy fix. I truly believe that there's more than enough people in place in Mississippi and most all of these states that are in the position where they can amend their constitution, they can get these things taken care of, and if not, then on the principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, these people need to be, you know, challenged in their next election or re-election, so the people that understand, you know, let's just move on and not create laws, but let's just move on and do the right thing. Bottom line, there is a path back by restoring our individual liberties and letting local communities and society hold people responsible and accountable on a local level and keep the federal government out of these trifling issues. The free market can correct these things on its own. And that free market in a political space is the election process, especially at the local elections. If I'm wrong, please call in and let me know. So before I get into my first citation, let me be clear here. The Constitution was not surrendered to interpretation. It was well-defined during the ratification process from these Federalist Papers and actually the debates of the ratification in each of these states. The irony is that every single one of these states almost harmonized with each other. They were basically saying the exact same thing. You cannot go through these ratification debates and find so many deviations that you go, hey, this doesn't make sense. We were completely duped by these nefarious men. That wasn't the case. And as that precursor question that I'm always going to be asking, who is providing deceit, we're going to find that there is harmony and they are in concert with the limitations and the definitions of what the federal government can do and what they can't do. This interpretation stuff that is left to the lawyers and judges is what they want you to believe, giving them the sole responsibility over the Constitution makes them the keepers of thought and what created the invention of constitutional law, when in fact there is no such thing as constitutional law. It's simply a contract. There are simple educated, these guys are simply and well-educated buffoons. And I'm not trying to denigrate the the politicians and lawyers, but these progressives that are doing this, these guys are buffoons because they're making this stuff up. And when you confront them with the facts, then they really can't argue. But what they're doing is they're self-aggrandizing their role at the expense of our liberties and sovereignty. And so we have to stop this. We can no longer allow an oligarchy of robes to rule us. To prove my point, one of the first Federalist Papers that I've selected today is by Hamilton regarding the judiciary. And again, let me ask that one question like I asked last week. Are the words in these founding documents that I'm citing here, which are clearly documented, the words of deceit? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive education system, the progressive colleges, the progressive professors, lawyers, politicians, are those the words of deceit? Who can we trust and how is our Constitution defined? So let's go and on this little aside here with regards to the Supreme Court, and let me read Hamilton's Federalist Paper, number 78, Alexander Hamilton, paragraph 17. Until the people have, by some solemn and authoritative act, annulled or changed the established form, in other words, through the Article 5 process of amending the Constitution, I'm adding this in here, it is binding upon themselves collectively as well as individually, and no presumption or even knowledge of their sentiments can warrant their representatives in departure from it. Prior to such an act, it would be easy to see that it would require an uncommon portion of, and emphasize here, fortitude in the judges to do their duty as faithful guardians of the Constitution, where legislative invasions of it have been instigated by the major voice of the community. So that's not what's happening. It's the minority voice, and it is the progressive agenda that has infiltrated the court system. So what he's talking about is that we were supposed to be able to count on these judges, but these guys have been inculcated and brainwashed into believing otherwise. So let me see. It looks like I've got a caller, and it's George, and he's down in California, and I think he's got a answer for me. So let's go to George. Hello, George.
Hello.
So do you have an answer to my question as to what is constitutionally significant for us on November 11th?
I'm not really sure how constitutionally significant this is, but the most significant event I could find on November 11th, 1918, an armistice was signed with Germany ending World War I, became Armistice Day, 1954 became Veterans Day, and every November 11th we celebrate it.
And actually, every state celebrates that, but it's not really constitutionally significant. So that's not really what I'm looking for, but I'll give you some clarification. When I say us, what's constitutionally significant for us, and because I'm broadcasting out of Washington State, is what's significant for us in Washington? What would be unique for Washington? But let me ask you this before we go to break real quick, because I'm going to hear music in my ear. Have you ever read my executive summary for Republic Review and How We Can Reclaim the Republic?
Yes, I did.
Well, let me hold you over, if you don't mind, because we're going to be going to break in probably about 30 seconds, and I should be hearing, there it is right there. There's the music. So let me hold you over. We'll bring you back in 4 minutes after the break, and I'll get your feedback on that. And if you can Google the answer, I have a set of signed books that I'll send down to you. Hold on.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, we're back, and I believe we still have George on the line. George, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and I can hear you, and I can hear myself, which is critical here.
Okay, good.
Let me get your opinion on the executive summary for Republic Review. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it made a lot of sense. You know, companies get audited by the customers all the time. Government contractors get audited by the government, and I think it's very important that our Constitution be followed,
right,
and that we verify that there's no discrepancies from what the Constitution allows.
Right. And so I'm not sure how many people harp on the fact that the Constitution is a contract. I mean, I know Madison did. I know Jefferson harped on this. I know the framers all harped on the fact that it was a compact. It was a treaty. It was a contract. It wasn't some, you know, divine, you know, living document that changed based on interpretation from these magical oracles we call the Supreme Court. And so I'm not sure how many talk show hosts you listen to. I'm not sure how many of the conservative entertainers are out there that, you know, harp on this, but I can't emphasize enough that what we have is a contract, and it is our contract. When I say ours, it's the state's contract, and that we, the people of these, you know, disparate states, have the ability to force our local state governments to audit this thing and step in on every issue of federal tyranny. So, well, I appreciate the feedback. Anything else?
Yes, I do listen to a few conservative radio talk show host. Uh-huh. One of them, this really reminds me of what Mark Levin is stressing about getting a convention of states. And don't know how closely this relates to that, but.
Well, so I'll answer that question because I think a week or two ago, I talked about the conventionites, the anti-conventionites, the un-anti-conventionites, and I'll get into this more and more, but the interesting thing, and I'll just kind of keep it into this small framework, that our problem is compliance to the Constitution. The federal government is failing to comply. What is another sentence, another paragraph being added to the Constitution that they may not like and they won't comply to? That is what they will do in amending the Constitution, will be wasting our time and valuable resources. Plus, it takes 38 states. If things go perfectly the way they subscribe that it's going to go, which there's no guarantee because there's a lot of organizations out there that this could easily go down the wrong path very easily. Either way, what the output will be, and it'll be a lot of effort to get 38 states to all agree on the fact that they want to insert this amendment of a balanced budget. There's 34 states right now that may be conservative in nature, but those other four states that aren't, they may not budge. And how do we know how long this is going to take when if we convened a convention for Republic Review and auditing, it only takes 13 states to acknowledge the fact that the federal government does not have the 38 states necessary to make that constitutional. So cease and desist and start standing this down. The process, and if you ever get my books and you'll read this, the process isn't turn the lights off tomorrow. It's a very slow process to basically start shutting down all their programs, their new programs, their new funding, and basically fund them out as they transition whatever they're doing back out to the states so that the states can take full ownership and responsibility for their state lands and what they need to be doing in the states, unless the states decide to amend this. But again, if it's just 13 states, then we've easily found that there's that immovable part of the states that will not allow the Department of Interior to become constitutional if the federal government says, okay, we'll amend the Constitution and give us this power, or you'll give us this power. No, we got 13 states that say no way. As a matter of fact, in most of these cases, we have well over a majority of the states, well over 25, just on the healthcare alone, there was 29 states that sued to stop this. I believe those 29 states still feel the same way. So anyway, I'm going to get into all of that. And the Convention of States is just a waste of time. And it's an opportunity for, good intended people to self-aggrandize themselves. And look at what I created, this amendment that goes in annals of history. I'm not going to get any credit for getting other people as a leader, getting people on board with holding the federal government accountable and complying to the Constitution. There's no words I'm going to write. There's no, changes to the Constitution. We're just going to get them to comply. So anyway, were you a Google interviewer, and did you figure out the significance of the 11th of November for us up here in Washington?
I think I did, and added Washington into the Google search. It really helped me out, and I got some information, and I confirmed it on reclaimingtherepublic.org. Click on the action tab, and November 11th, 1889, Washington Territory joined the Union, became Washington State.
Right. And you're absolutely correct. So, you deserve a set of my books. I'm going to autograph these and I'll mail these down to you. But I'm going to rant, or I'm going to bloviate a little bit here, if you don't mind. I am trying to get the people, the good conservatives in this state, to recognize the significance, and all other states, to start recognizing their birth in this union, to acknowledge that they are a stakeholder, that they became a plank holder in this contract when they ratified, or when they became a full-fledged and recognized state. State of Washington is November 11th. So I'm just asking that we acknowledge and celebrate our partaking of the Republic as stakeholders, and try to come up with an event statewide, locally, or what have you. I tried to do that last year, and if you would have listened to some of those podcasts, I actually mentioned that as I was building up, but it just seemed like I could not get any constitutionalist on board to say, you know what, that's a great idea. We need to do something. Because as a veteran, 20 years in the Marine Corps, I'm okay with finding a different day to honor veterans. I think it's far more important because most veterans understand the importance of raising your arm to the square and saying, I'm going to defend and protect the Constitution. I think becoming that stakeholder in the Constitution is far more important. So anyway, thank you for letting me go on.
All right.
Anyway, let you go talk to my screener, producer, engineer. He'll get your information, whatever you want to give him, whether it be the phone number and I can call you or what have you. And then I will get your address and all of that so that I can sign these two books and get them in the mail to you. Thank you for calling. And
all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being resourceful. I'm glad I can end this contest and we can move on for something else. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. So I was just speaking about the Supreme Court's role in Hamilton's Federalist Number 78 and how these judges were supposed to have the fortitude to basically do their duty as faithful guardians of the Constitution and not be champions for progressive agendas or for racist agendas. In my first book, I talk about how the South was very smart and the Democratic Party was very, very smart in identifying those lawyers who would support racism and slavery on the bench. And that's one of the reasons why the Dred case went the way it did. Most people don't know that Dred Scott was actually tried by a jury of 12 in Missouri and was announced a free man. And the prosecuting attorney basically said, I'm going to appeal this, and went up to the Supreme Court. And Taney was the one that basically judged him back into slavery for the rest of his life. That's what they did by stacking the court. And the stacking of the court was first started by Hamilton working with Adams in of creating this new court system and appointing judges. He was getting Federalists and Nationalists into the court system that would basically try to self-aggrandize their position and move the federal government towards a more central role in centralizing powers and so forth. Anyway, let me move on. So last week, I talked about Federalist Paper 14, 45, and 7, where I clearly delineated that the general government is not charged with the whole power of making and administering. This is all Madison, by the way. Its jurisdiction is limited to the enumerated objects, and that the federal government was very limited and defined, and that their encroachments could easily be defeated by the states. So in those three Federalist Papers, I kind of established that. So, well, I guess I'm done. There can't be any more. But lo and behold, there are more citations, and I'm going to get into some right after this break. I'm going to overwhelm you. If you want to call and say, stop, we get it, we agree, let's move on. I need for history to actually cite these things so that we can move forward academically. There's the music. We'll be right back. Thank you. All right. So we're back and we've closed out a contest. Took a little while, but thanks, George, for calling in. Two asides. First off, I want to kind of get a consensus out there. I mean, how many people really feel like the birthday of a state is a little bit more important than the day we acknowledge the service of veterans? That we can move that to any day, but you can't move your birthday. Your birthday is tied to a very specific day. And so this is my challenge, because this is the only state that's in this situation or position. And so I think that as a veteran, I'd be happy if people actually put, to be honest, let me be honest here. When I go to events and they say, you know, can we have all of our veterans stand? And they just want to clap and applaud so that they can feel better in acknowledging veterans. It doesn't make me feel any better because I feel like I'm just a monkey that they're just having me, you know, get the acknowledgement that they're thanking me with an applause. If you really want to thank us, if you really want to, you know, show your support, then fix the Veterans Administration and amend the Constitution and make it a legitimate department. That was one of the things that George Washington was very frustrated that he saw many of the good men that served and fought for this nation unable to get any extra support that they badly needed through a Veterans Administration. They basically just got their pay and that was it. There was no Veterans Administration and it wasn't considered a constitutional role and it still isn't. And so, you know, anybody that's out there that says, oh, he wants to amend the Constitution, I think that there are things that have to be amended. But I think the most important thing is to get the federal government in compliance because they're spending us into oblivion. Anybody that listens to all the other shows on this Business Talk Network and any other Business Talk Network will tell you that we cannot sustain this spending. Well, let's spend the money on the constitutional things first, and let's not spend the money on the unconstitutional things. Well, let me get back to the aside that I'm on. Talk to people. Find out, you know, how they feel. I would like to have this grow legs. I'd like to see local leaders actually start planning and have some kind of an event where we celebrate the solemn responsibility of being partakers in this constitutional republic and being the overwatchers of that little nefarious general government that has been usurping powers for 200 years. So anyway, let me move into my next citation, and this one is Federalist Paper number 43, and this is paragraph 30, and again, it's Madison. I have plenty of Hamiltons coming up. There's a couple of J's that I'll get into, but it's not really important as far as the contract and so forth, but I think it helps set the paradigm at a macro when I get into, you know, what Jay said in his very limited Federalist Paper articles. But in Federalist Paper number 43, paragraph 30, Madison says, a compact, and as I read this, try to remember what Lincoln said with regards to the Civil War and the secession of states. A compact between independent sovereigns founded on ordinary acts of legislative authority can pretend to no higher validity than a league or treaty between the parties. It is an established doctrine on the subject of treaties that all the articles are mutual conditions of each other, that a breach of any one article is a breach of the whole treaty, and that a breach committed by either of the parties absolves the other and authorizes them, if they please, to pronounce the compact violated and void. In other words, what was going on and the reason the southern states basically seceded was that they were dealing with hostile taxes and so forth from the north. Even though they were veiled abolition and so forth, they actually had the right to secede. Lincoln should have pursued the Civil War in a completely different way. He should have gone after slavery first instead of saying you can't secede. He should have basically applied the Monroe Doctrine, which Monroe basically said anybody messing in this hemisphere has to deal with us. He could have taken that one step further and said any state that is exercising or any nation that is exercising slavery in this hemisphere, we're coming after you. And then boom, voila, it would have been done. He would have saved 2 years of the Civil War. But again, I'm, you know, getting a little bit off track. The Constitution is one such treaty, and there are 50 sovereigns today that are a part of this. Remember that previous citation on the judiciary. The judiciary, by inserting their interpretations, are violating this contract. The contract did not give them the ability to push in agendas. Well, we believe that there's emanations from penumbras, and I hope everybody looks that up in the Roe v. Wade case, because that is clearly legal talk of saying, well, we're going to try to wiggle this thing into a space where we, you know, want this to happen, and that's what we're going to do. And by that ruling, unconstitutionally, they changed the direction and nature of this nation. This next, and as a matter of fact, you can probably tell on a different aside, I've still got this little tickle in my throat. And fortunately, I didn't have what happened last week, which is a host nightmare when you can't stop your coughing and tickle. But I've been cursed with this sinus infection, and it's just been killing me over the past week. So anyway, back to this next Federalist paper, number 46. This is paragraph 7, and James Madison is saying, "But ambitious encroachments of the federal government on the authority of the state governments would not excite the opposition of a single state or of a few states only. They would be signals of general alarm. Every state government," I'm inserting state here, "every state government would espouse the common cause. A correspondence would be opened. Plans of resistance would be concerted. One spirit would animate the conduct of the whole." So what he's saying here is that when the ambitious federal government exceeds the authority of the state governments, it's not going to excite just one or a few. It would excite all. But look at how well we've been trained in not being excited at all about all of these intrusions. There's plenty of people that feel frustrated, but I truly believe that that's because we've been split ideologically, that when the Fabian Society at the end of the 19th century, when the communists came here and they basically took over our education system, they have done a stellar job in inculcating and brainwashing people and getting people on board with the statist ideology. So anyway, it's clear that what Madison is saying is that anytime the federal government is encroaching on the states and violating this constitution, plans of resistance would be concerted. One spirit would animate and conduct the whole. In other words, we would be all singing one voice, convene a convention to audit the Constitution. And I will prove this, because this is exactly what Madison and Jefferson did when they saw the first violation of the Constitution with Adams and the Sedition Act. Anyway, let me get to this next one, which is Federalist Paper number 17, Alexander Hamilton, and this is paragraph 13. I'm giving you all of this so that you can go back and check this. "The separate governments in a confederacy may aptly be compared with the feudal baronies, with this advantage in their favor, that from the reasons already explained, they will generally possess the confidence and goodwill of the people, and with so important a support, will be able effectually to oppose all encroachments of the national government." So here's several citations where they're talking about the federal government encroaching upon them, and the states would be able to use the favor of the state citizens and be able to call upon them to stand up, rise up, and shut down these unconstitutional usurpations of their powers. Well, I could easily go on and on and on, and I have gone on and on and on, and because I'm going to hear the music in my ear very shortly, so I'm really out of time, so I need to wrap this up. This is only just a few of the ways and means that the states have, and it's very specific of how we can do this. So that's why it's very important and imperative that you stay tuned in and that you can learn, get informed, and get involved. So tune in next week, 4 to 5, Wednesday, and we'll get more into this. Thank you very much. God bless.